Myself. Mabadvihi. By all of you. Loka. The world. Mangalam. Welfare. Yat. Because. Kritaha. Made. Krishna. The personality of Godhead. Samprashnaha. Relevant questions. Yena. By which. Atma. Self. Supraseedati. Completely pleased. Translation, O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna, and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Since it has been stated herein before that in the Bhagavatam the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya are proper and just because they pertain to Krishna, who is the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. In Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, text 15, the personality of Godhead says that in all the Vedas there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the questions that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. The whole world is full of questions and answers. Birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers. And in the evening, also the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers, and so also the lawyers in the court and the students in the schools and colleges. The legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers, and the politicians and the press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. All things but Krishna give complete temporary satisfaction only. So if we have to have complete satisfaction, we must take to the questions and answers about Krishna. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna, we can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things. So, Muniya Sadhu Prishtoham Bhavadvir Lokamangalam Yatkruta Krishna Samprashno Yenatma Supersedati. So, Omagana Timiranda Shaganjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shikurve Namaha. So, someone may ask here, like Prabhupada makes the statement that even the birds and the beasts are asking questions and answers, so just like we hear the chirping of the bird outside. So what is the question or answer it is making right now? I mean, that's an interesting question. Well, actually, the question, there may be several different questions or answers the bird is making. One is, if it's a little baby bird, you know, where's my food? Isn't it just like yesterday, Nimai, who was saying, where's my pita, where's my father? And then the father was not there. Even for 1 second, the father was not there, isn't it? He was crying. I was thinking, I was actually thinking, I should love Krishna so much like that. And the gopis, they love Krishna so much. There's a statement, Yugayitam Nimishena Chakshusha Pravashayitam Shunyayitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Vidahename. That considering a moment's separation, then they're considering a moment to be like 12 years or more. It's so intense. So, and the gopis also, they're cursing Lord Brahma because he has created eyes that blink so they can't see Krishna for one, you know, 11th of a second or something like that. So that's how much they love Krishna. So I was actually appreciating love of Krishna when I was seeing Nima yesterday. Well, yeah, he was giving me some spiritual realization when he was crying out, you know, Daddy, you know, Peter. And, you know, just when his father left the driver's seat and went to the side, just took like one half of a minute or something, one half of a second practically, and he couldn't bear the separation. So I was thinking that we should be like that with Krishna. Anyway, so that's a question and answer. Where's my father? Where's my father? And I kept answering him, he's just now coming. He'll be there in a second. Anyway, and also his father kept saying, I'm coming, son. So there's an answer and a question, which is all right. Coming, son. He said, coming, son. That's actually funny. So, and then so as far as the birds are concerned, of course, they're not saying, coming, son, you know, where's daddy, where's Pita? But they may be saying, where's daddy with the worm? You know, and he's saying, where's daddy with the bakora or whatever daddy gives him? So what is the difference? Anyways, or the birds may be answering other birds in a mating call. You know, where's my female bird? And the male bird is going cock-a-doodle-doo, whatever the dirt birds go. Isn't it?
Yeah.
And the female bird is answering, here I am. These things go on amongst the animals. Just like I was in Lambasa recently, and there were two roosters. They were fighting. You heard the story? Did I tell you the story? No. It's a very interesting story. There were two roosters tearing each other apart. You know what a rooster is? Male chicken. And so I was wondering, why are they fighting like that? And then up on top of a high platform, there was the female rooster. And she was watching them. I'm a female, yeah, chicken. And she was watching them fight for her. Fight for her hand. And she was enjoying life. Oh, they love me so much, they're fighting for me. So I was thinking, what difference is that between human beings, you know, and chickens, right? Just fighting each other like that. And then, anyway, she was enjoying it. What's the difference between that and a Bollywood movie? In a Bollywood movie, you have two roosters in human bodies. And two chicken, one chicken in a human body, right? And they're doing the same thing. It's an interesting comparison. So anyway, so all the animals, they're asking, you know, where is food? Or here's food? Or the bees, for example, the bees, one bee goes out and finds the pollen and the flower and does a little dance. It doesn't talk. Bees don't really, like, talk in the sense of vocalizing with their vocal cords. But they dance. They do a bee dance. And the bee dance tells the other bees, isn't it, where the food is. And they all go, you know, to the pollen or whatever it is in the flower. And the same thing with the ants. The ants even have a method of communication. Just like if you leave some sweets out, then you'll find within 2 or 3 hours you'll find a whole line of ants. Not just one ant. I mean, you'll find millions of ants just like making a line, you've made a new road and everything like that to where the sweet is. So they must have some means of communication, isn't it? I mean, how else would they all know to follow the leader? Or the birds, they fly in a pattern in the sky, isn't it? There's one leader and then when they migrate. So anyways, you can see in all the animals, there's actually communication of some sort. And this communication is based on four principles, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. You know, where is food? You know, where can I find a nest? Where can I find a good wife? Because they didn't say wife, you know, mate. Because wife means you're married. And you are my enemy, and I'm trying to scare you off. Or whatever, you know. So it's like the frogs. You know, the frogs have their songs too. The frogs have a pouch, and they go rivet, 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 rivet. And what they're doing is they're just caught. Two things are happening. One is they're calling the female frog. And the male frog with the biggest bag under his chin and the biggest rivet gets the female frog. And they're also calling a snake to eat them. Two things are happening there. Of course, they don't want the snake to eat them. So anyway, so these questions are going on. It's like he's asking a question, would you play with me right now? Even though they're not verbalizing it, would you play with me? Would you have some fun? So he's asking questions, and she's responding, yes. This is all questions and answers. So, it's interesting that the Vedic literatures ask questions and give answers not only about spiritual things, but the majority of the Vedic literatures deal with material things, which is quite interesting. Like if you go back and you look at the four original Vedas, you know, the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda, they're mainly dealing with questions and answers about material upliftment, you know, with sacrifice. For example, this Rig Veda is actually hymns to the demigods for material things. The Yajurveda is how to perform the sacrifices to the demigods in general. Samaveda is how to chant it, you know, how to be musical when you're doing the whole thing. So you play the drum properly or sing in tune. You know, it actually has the different melodies. Samaveda actually has the different melodies and the different rhythms and everything like that. So even the four Vedas, the original four Vedas, they're mainly dealing with that. Of course, there is some indication of the Supreme Personality of God in the four Vedas, Om Tad Vishnu Paramampara Pashanti Yat Suryaha. That's there in the four original Vedas. And also the Purusha Shukta prayers to the Supreme Lord in terms of his creation or manifestation of this material world is there in the four Vedas. But mainly, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nis Trigunya Vavarjuna Nir Dvandvo Nitu Satvasto Nir Yogik Shema Atmavan. The Vedas mainly deal with the questions and answers of the three modes of material nature. In other words, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Why is that? Because that's what people are interested in. And the Vedas deal with these things. Why would the Vedas deal with these things? Why don't they just let people just ask other people about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending? Because when you ask the Vedas, or you go to the Vedas for answers for these things, then you get gradually elevated. Because in all the Vedic hymns, you're chanting Om. And you're reminded, by chanting Om, Pranavas Sarva Vedeshu Shabdake Porosham Nirshu. The Om is the original sound of the Vedic literatures. It's the pranava. It's the primary sound of the Vedic literatures. So even when you offer it to the demigods, you're chanting Om, which is Krishna's name. So sort of a trick. And you're recognizing some restrictions in gratification in this world. Without the Vedic injunctions, people wouldn't have any restrictions, like the Manu Samhita and other Vedic literatures like that. People would just be, you know, instead of getting married, it'd be like the Western world, you know. You just say, hey, I am Adam, I'm Eve. Like that. Isn't it? Just think about it. Just think about it. What would happen unless we had some restrictions in religious life, restrictions even in the material world. So the Vedic literatures impose some restrictions, gradually bring one to a higher platform, and so then Krishna says in the Gita, as Prabhupada is quoting here in the purport, Vedaischa Saveraham Eva Vedyo, by all the Vedas he is to be known. So people may question, how can you say that when the original four Vedas deal very little with Krishna or Vishnu? Mostly they're dealing with the demigods. Isn't it? Mostly it's demigod mantras. So how can you say, you know, if you do a poll, that is, if you do a numerical count of the original four Vedas, you actually find, you know, Krishna gets like, well, Vishnu, not Krishna, but Vishnu gets like 1% and the demigods get 99%. And so, you know, how are we saying Krishna is God? Well, there's an explanation for that. Those of you who heard my previous classes understand the explanation. Just like if you're approaching the government here in Australia, you don't approach the Prime Minister. You approach the local people, isn't it? I mean, if you want a driver's license, do you go to the Prime Minister? Maybe if you're his buddy, you know, and you're another politician, or you're bribing him enough or something like that. In India, you just bribe. But anyways, that's a different issue. But you go to the local office, right? You go to the local office. So your dealings are mostly with lesser officials. And as far as the dealings with the Prime Minister, practically nothing, isn't it? Even though the Prime Minister is superior. So therefore, you can't judge by numerical count who is greater and who is less. You judge by reading certain verses like Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Suryaha, that Vishnu is supreme. And then there's many verses like that too, but not by numerical count. So anyway, so those are the four original Vedas. Krishna says in the Gita that that's what they're meant for, Trigunya, dealing with the material world. And then, of course, later you go on to the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra, and they deal more with the absolute truth. Many of them are written in code-like form in very short. Nimite. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
All right. Beto. Okay, I think we'll have to do something about this. Okay, so many of them are written in code-like form. That means very short statements that are very difficult to understand. So therefore, you need commentaries. And you need spiritual masters to understand the Vedic literatures. Maybe he can have a private class outside. All right. He likes his father more. So, anyway, getting back to the point. So, you know, in the later Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads, and also the Vedanta, there's also information about the absolute truth, but it's not really written specifically in great detail, because actually the word Upanishad means to bring closer. So they're to encourage people to accept a spiritual master to understand the Vedic literatures. But then finally, when you get to the Gita and the Puranas, especially the Bhagavad Purana, you're dealing more specifically with the Supreme Personality of God and the Absolute Truth. Therefore, the Bhagavad Purana, now it's questions and answer time. So the Bhagavad Purana deals directly with the Personality of God, and therefore it's called the Amala Purana or Spotless Purana, and it's called the Paramahamsa Sanghita. That's a Srimad Bhagavatam. So therefore, we concentrate mostly on the Bhagavad Purana. Okay. That's another one. We're going to need a special room next time I come, you know, with glass walls in it. So we concentrate primarily on the Bhagavad Purana, which gives information of the ultimate truth, which is Krishna, and also Srimad Bhagavad Gita. You know, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Matak Paraturam Nanyat Kinchid Asti Dhananjaya. There's nothing higher than me. Krishna says, Aham Sarvasya Pravo Matak Sarvam Pravartate. Everything comes from me. Krishna says, Aham Bija Pradapita. You know, these are other verses in Bhagavad Gita. I am the source, or the father, actually, literally, of the demigods. So, and then Krishna ultimately says in Bhagavad Gita, Manvana Bhava Mad Bhakto, you should always think of me. Surrender unto me, sarvadharmam puracaja, mame kam sharanam braja. So this is actually the purpose of the whole Vedas. And Krishna states this in the Gita, in the 15th, in the 15th chapter, text 15. Krishna makes this very, very clear. So the questions being referred to here are being asked by the sages at a place named Naimisharanya. Maybe you've heard of Naimisharanya before. That's where Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken before that, too. The first time Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken was actually by Krishna. And Krishna to our Lord Brahma, the first person in the universe. And there's only four verses. Those are called the nutshell, chatur verses. Like Ahamevasamevagre Nanyadyat Sadasat Puram. Like this. These are the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. And they were spoken to Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma expounded or expanded on them. And then he spoke them to Narada Muni. Narada Muni spoke them in turn to his spiritual master, his disciple, Śrīla Vyāsadeva. And then Vyāsadeva conveyed that information to Śukadeva Goswami while Śukadeva Goswami was in the womb of his mother. And then Śukadeva Goswami spoke it to Maharaj Parīkṣit. And then within that assembly, when Śukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parīkṣit, was Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami, we're getting to the point here, Suta Goswami was the son of Romaharshana Suta, and Suta Goswami spoke it to the sages of Naimisharanya, and those sages were headed by Shonaka Rishi. So that's really what's happening here. So at each step, the Bhagavatam actually gets expanded to a certain extent. Not changed, but expanded with further pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, from four verses to what we have today, to 12 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But the whole Bhagavatam is meant to approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so the primary question the sages are asking, Shonaka is asking Suta Goswami, because he's the head of the sages there, is by what are religious principles protected in this different age, this age of Kali that we're in right now? Because the age of Kali is the age of quarrel, where everyone is manda sumanda matayo, manda bhagyu padrata. Everyone is unfortunate, short-lived, etc. So, and then the answer is, Krishna Swadhamo Bhakate, Dharma Jnana Visoha, that when Krishna left for his own abode, then religious principles are protected by the Bhagavat Purana. Kalo nasta dursamesha purinarko dunodataha. You know that verse? No, it's an important verse. Krishna Swadhamo Bhakate. When Krishna left for his abode, then along with him went dharma, that means religious principles, jnana, dvisaha, I mean everything else that pertained to religion went with Krishna to his abode. So what are we going to do, the sages were asking basically, in this age of Kali where Krishna is left, dharma is left, knowledge is left, you know, what are we going to do? And they were previously performing a sacrifice that was supposed to last for 1,000 years. But because that was not the Yuga Dharma, they were just choking on the smoke of the sacrifice. That's what the Bhagavatam describes. So therefore, they're saying, what are we going to do in this age? And then Suta Goswami replies, then in this age we have to take shelter of this Bhagavat Purana. So this is a very important literature, this Bhagavat Purana. And our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, dedicated practically all of his writing time to translating and commenting on, purporting, this Srimad Bhagavatam. Very, very important literature. Actually, it's the most important literature. There are other Puranas too. I mean, there's 18 Mahapuranas, and each one of those Puranas deals with a specific mode of nature. In fact, there's 6 of those in the mode for people in the mode of goodness, 6 in the mode of passion, and 6 in the mode of ignorance. But the Srimad Bhagavatam is for those in the transcendental realm, or those in transcendental consciousness. It's not for those in the mode of nature, or modes of nature. Okay? So maybe we'll end here, we'll keep it short. So any questions or comments?
Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedas.
Cream. It's called the cream of the Vedas.
The cream of Vedas. This is relevant to Krishna and the devotees.
Yeah.
Has been picked from all the Vedas. Otherwise, the Vedas is all mixed up with material and.
Well, most of the Vedas are dealing with people. They're for people. There's a purpose behind them. They're not bad. They're good. It's a purpose to actually elevate people gradually. Because most people, if you tell them, just devote yourself to Krishna and you know, realize this world, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Dukalaya Mashashvatam is temporary and a place of misery. They just will say, forget it, I'm not interested in Krishna consciousness. So instead, the Vedas give different allurements. Like here, if you want like a good husband, because you don't want a husband, I know that, but if a lady wants a good husband, she'll worship Katyayani in Durga. And the girls do that in India today. They actually go to Durga, ah, Durga, please give me a good husband. And then 5 minutes later, some handsome young man with a lot of money comes walking down. Right? It's like Kishori prayed to Durga, and then Raj came. He came knocking just 5 minutes later. Who's there? Oh, Durga sent me. Not really. It didn't happen that quickly. So there's demigod worship because people are interested in material things. And you get quick results from them, too. Just like, you know, in India. Let's take India, for example. I mean, demigod worship is like a macrocosm of India. India is like a microcosm of the demigod worship. So like in India, if you want something, you give someone money, you bribe them. You don't necessarily have to follow the law. And probably it's better not to. So, and the same thing with the demigods. If you really want something really quickly, you just like go to some demigod, offer worship, and say, please give me this, and then the demigod will very quickly give you the result. Of course, it doesn't help you with becoming happy, but that's another issue. Just like there was a story in the Mahabharata about one man, he wanted to find, there's 33 million demigods. So this one man wanted to find a demigod that nobody else was worshiping. Because if you find a demigod that no one else is worshiping, that demigod will really love you. You know, if you go to another demigod like Indra, you got so many people worshiping him, right? So there's a lot of competition, but if you find you're the only one worshiping, that demigod will give you everything. So this guy became very rich because he found this demigod who no one else knew about. So that's why people approach the demigod. And Krishna says, also in the Gita, kamaistasta ritigyana prapajante na javata. People approach the demigods because they have some desires. Or he says they're overcome by lust. But that means desire. So, but there's a reason for that. And so it indirectly engages one in Krishna's service. Like indirectly they're accepting Krishna, or at least accepting someone superior. Like you see in the aboriginal cultures, they're generally worshipping like demigod type of personalities. Yeah. Like the sun. I mean, in South America, for example, they have the sun, the temples of the sun god. You know, you have the Aztecs and so many other cultures. They worship the sun and the moon. In the United States, there's the American Indians who worship the wind, and that's Vayu, of course, and they worship the sun, Surya, and all the different elements and different gods like that. So there's a recognition of something superior. So that's one step in the spiritual path. At least they're taking that one step. Now, you know, in the Western world, they don't even take that step nowadays. They don't worship anyone. They just said, you know, I'm a self-made man. I can do it all myself. All I need to do is, you know, work hard and read that book, The Secret, you know. You ever hear that book? In the movie? No. There's a famous movie in the West. It's called The Secret. I don't know if you heard about it. But what it says is that if you want something enough and you... let's say you really are meditating on it 24 hours a day, the universe has to give it to you. Like the universe is like Aladdin. You know the story of Aladdin? He's like Aladdin's genie. You know, you rub the lamp, the genie comes out and says, your wish is my desire. So that's the Western conception right now, that there's no God. It's just like you have to want something, be greedy enough and meditate on it enough and you'll get it. But at least in the Vedic conception, you worship the demigod. You understand there's someone superior to you. Maybe, you know, you don't go all the way to God, but at least you go to some God's governmental agents, you know, and you approach them. And then they give you something, and then you say, hey, yeah, there are people superior. And eventually you ask, who's higher than you? Just like if you have trouble with the government, and one government official, what do? You say, who's your boss? Then if you have trouble with him, who's your boss? I mean, I remember dealing with a phone company one time. There's a trouble with a bill. You know what a bill is? You know how much money they're asking. And the lady I was talking to was probably in India anyway, but because it's outsourcing, you know, call centers and everything in India. So I was talking to her, and she said, I said, who's your boss? And she said, I'm in charge. I said, no, you have a boss. I want to speak to your boss. And I kept insisting. Eventually, the boss came online. And then he settled my whole problem there. So in the same way, by approaching the demigods, eventually you realize they have a boss. And then you go there to Krishna. Or Vishnu. Vishnu, same thing. Krishna, Vishnu. So, any questions or comments about any of these things? No? So it's getting late.
Some people will say that we get much happiness and satisfaction from material dealings, like enjoying my relationship with my family and
that's all right.
Eating nice types of foods. And so why... And I don't really find, discussions on spiritual issues to be very satisfying. So
that's all right.
So how do we...
We have no problem. That's your desire. Everybody has their different level of spiritual advancement.
But then how...
We don't criticize you.
But then how do we correlate it to what the last line of this purpose says, that, only spiritual discussions...
Because that's ultimate satisfaction. Because you find in the material world, the satisfaction or happiness is generally dependent upon the cessation of distress for some period of time. Just like, let's say you want to enjoy food. You know, say you can enjoy food. Can you enjoy food if you're not hungry?
No.
So hunger is actually distress. You know, when you're feeling hungry, you know, it's distress. So then you enjoy food, but then after you enjoy the food, you're no longer hungry. Is it enjoyable anymore? At that point, you don't want to see any more food. So what is that happiness? That happiness is based upon the negation of some distress or some imbalance in the system. And anyway, that's generally material happiness. So therefore, you have to do something called bhogatyaga. Bhogatyaga means sometimes you enjoy, sometimes you just give up your enjoyment. Back and forth. And just like you say, if you're expecting to eat a big feast tonight, you don't want to eat like 2 hours before the feast, right? Because that will spoil your appetite. And if your appetite is spoiled, how can you enjoy? But spiritual happiness is kevalananda kanda. That is simply happiness, simply bliss. It doesn't depend. It's not part of the duality of this world that it depends upon the cessation of some imbalance. Or the sensation of some pain. It's just pure happiness. Whereas the happiness in this world is a duality type of thing.
So how can we get people to actually enjoy spiritual issues?
How can we get people to it? We can't force people to do anything. We can expose people to spiritual life, and then it's up to them. Spiritual life is actually attractive, and then they will be attractive. It's not that we can say, this mature world is suffering, so therefore you better realize it right now or else we're going to yell at you more. And then it becomes like that, you know, the Christians say, you know, you're going to hell unless you do what we say. We just say, Krishna consciousness is nice. Here's the chanting. Here's the other process. Here are the other processes, hearing about Krishna, hearing some philosophy, hearing Krishna's pastimes. And then people automatically become attached or attracted. Krishna in the Gita says, Raso Varjam Raso Pyasa Parandrastani Vartate. They get a higher taste or a higher pleasure. Alright? So I think you have to get to work today? What time does your work start?
Well, it starts at 6 anyway.
Oh, it's 6?
Yeah. Well, it's a flexi time, so I can go at any time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I got scared they were holding you out for work. So. So, all right, why don't we end now and then get on. Did you all stay for prasadam this morning or breakfast? Okay.